And now, here on BBC Radio 3, it's time for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Hello on today's Jazz Lineup, saxophonist Courtney Pine, CBE, on his new CD of ballads, where he puts the sax to one side and plays exclusively bass clarinet, alongside award-winning pianist Zoe Rahman. Plus part two of our special recording of the Blue Notes at the London Jazz Festival. But to get us in a South African mood, here's one of the country's greatest exports, Abdullah Ibrahim.
Thank you.
From the 1998 album Voice of Africa, Black on Brown Cherries from Abdullah Ibrahim, with some really uplifting saxophone from Basil Coetzee. Let's stay in South Africa with Tananas, a trio whose career was sadly cut short 11 years ago next month by the untimely death of bassist Gito Buloy. This is the track Kanimambu. Tananas and Kanimambu from the album Seed. The late Gito Buloy on bass and vocals, with Ian Herman on drums and percussion, and guitarist Steve Newman. Let's bring our South African odyssey right up to date now with drummer Tumi Mugerossi, who's made a glorious fusion of South African jazz with opera singers. This is Slaves' Emancipation.
Thank you.
Well, it shouldn't work, but it does. That was Slaves Emancipation from drummer Tumi Mogorossi's album Project ELO, which came out late last year on the Jazzman label. Well, hopefully you're now so much in a South African mood that you've forgotten that we're in the tail end of a gloomy British winter. And it's time now for the second part of our live concert recording of the Blue Notes on the Jazz Lineup stage at the London Jazz Festival last November. On piano, Bokani Daya. On the saxophones, Shabaka Hutchins is playing tenor. Soweto Kinch is on alto. Percy Purseglove's on trumpet. Carl Rashid Abel on bass. And Mark Sanders on drums. They start with a track which the Blue Notes originally recorded for the South African Broadcasting Corporation in 1964. This is The Blessing Light.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We are celebrating the great music of the Blue Notes. That was a tune by Judy Bukwana, popularized in the Brotherhood of Breath group called Mra. That's not the right pronunciation, but you know, hey. Tried my best. We're going to continue with a feature for Zoedo Kinch. As you know, as the Blue Notes started dying, it became a quartet, not a sextet. So we're going to feature a couple of smaller ensembles. This one features Zoedo called Doge House. Thank you.
was Dorke ending that set by the Blue Notes, preceded by MRA, both of them Dudu Pukwana compositions. You heard Bakani Dyer on piano. The saxophones were Shabaka Hutchins on tenor and Soweto Kinch on alto. Percy Purse Club was on trumpet, Carl Rashid Abel on bass and Mark Sanders on the drums. And that was recorded on the Jazz Lineup stage in the Claw Ballroom at the South Bank on November the 15th during last year's London Jazz Festival. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Saxophonist Courtney Pine is how the man is usually introduced, but for his latest project, that label simply doesn't apply. Bass clarinetist Courtney Pine maybe doesn't have quite the same ring to it, but his new CD, Song, the ballad book, alongside pianist Zoe Rahman, opens a whole new room of possibilities and sounds. In a moment, I'll be speaking to the man himself, but first let's hear a bit of Courtney Pine, bass clarinetist. Nightingale sang in Berkeley Square from Courtney Pine's new bass clarinet album called Song, The Ballad Book. And I'm delighted that Courtney is with me in the studio. Hello, Courtney.
Hi, Claire. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. I'm very well, thank you. I heard about a 10 p.m. sighting of you in Berkeley Square playing the bass clarinet, playing that tune. Was it you?
Can you imagine?
Was it you? Somebody told me it was you practicing and getting the feel of Berkeley Square.
Well, as a Londoner, I like to get a feel of as many places as possible, as many positions, and it's just nice to have the opportunity to do this.
That was nice. Richard Rodney Bennett, who, when he was young, grew up listening to this song, used to think it was such a magical place, you know, and he was couldn't wait to get to London and have a look at Berkeley Square, and he made this special journey to get to it, and then he gets there and it's all car showrooms, and his dream just dissolves.
Shattered. In front of his very eyes. Can you imagine the Americans coming over like Sonny Rollins and suddenly realising, but this is it?
Yeah, this is it, this is it. What drew you towards the idea of a whole album of bass clarinet? Because it's a completely different beast. What was the initial idea?
Yeah, I like the instrument. I really love the bass clarinet. It's not about what it can do, it's what it can't do. A lot of people think of Peter and the Wolf when they think of the bass clarinet. You know, they think of that kind of thing, playing background in the orchestra or low notes in a big band or the second or third instrument that a saxophonist would switch to in a set. But I wanted to treat it as a lead instrument. And there haven't been many. There are some, but there haven't been many.
There haven't been many. I mean, I've got things. I've got Herbie Mann, Eric Dolphy, and this morning I was listening to some Bob Mintzer.
Yes.
Doing a little bit, but then I kind of ran out, so.
Yeah, there's a few more.
All right.
You know, it gets a bit thin when you get past 10.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you get the likes of, you know, Luis Sclaves. There's classical guys like Henri Bock who are really good, doing it in the classical way, but they have jazz leanings. In the jazz world, I mean, you mentioned Mintzer. He plays other instruments. Mm. Eric Dolphy, he played other instruments.
And you play other instruments.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But for me, I wanted to give it a go, you know, and I tried on an album before called Europa to literally spend 24/7 with the instrument to see what I could actually create out of it.
Because let's talk about the technique of it. It's completely different. It's the same as a tenor saxophone in as far as the key is the same.
Yeah.
But the fingering's massively different. I mean, it's four octaves, isn't it, as opposed to sort of two and a half octaves. So, and it's all, I mean, that must take years to get your head around
that. It's actually seven octaves.
Seven octaves?
Yeah. This is some of the myths about the instrument where it's
seven
limited.
Seven octaves? I thought it was just a piano that had seven octaves.
No, because think of the range. If you think of Sermon, John Sermon, and the way he plays the baritone, he's able to play five octaves. And it's the same with the bass clarinet. The longer the instrument, the more tubing you have, the more you can explore the whole harmonic range, yes. And so for me, not everybody asks you to play up there, but it can be done.
So how did you approach it? What was the fingering especially and the whole?
Well, the fingering is different in every register. And that may be taxing or confusing to some, but if you've been playing saxophone for as long as I have, you want a challenge, you want something else. And the bass clarinet is so beyond a tenor saxophone, soprano saxophone, in terms of how you approach it. And it's a different design. You know, the saxophone goes conically out and the bass clarinet is just a tube. So the challenge to make sounds out of it is very different. And so for me, the approach was long notes, research, listening to others and what they have tried to get out of the instrument. But also with this particular album, which was about interpreting songs, it was more about the timbre, the tone, limiting myself not to playing, you know, lots of notes.
Yeah, I read that you said that this album you probably couldn't have recorded when you were 19 and that, you know, you've sort of got much more sophisticated approach to perhaps the melody line, you know. I've added that bit on that bit, but you did say that at 19 perhaps you would have just gone played a lot of notes rather than what you're leaving out this time, really.
Very much so, because I think when you're young you want to try as much as possible, but as you get older you realize the silence is as much of the sound as the notes. And also with this particular album I tried to interpret the lyrics.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the melodies.
Yeah.
You know, there were certain syllables which were played a certain way, like Chaka Khan's Through the Fire. There's a certain way she sings. And to play it on an instrument, it actually doesn't work.
Okay.
And what you have to do is find a way around the instrument to make it sound appealing.
How much attention did you pay to lyrics before this? And were you one of the musicians that can sing along to every tune? Did you know the story? I mean, some musicians love tunes, but just actually don't really listen to
them. Yeah, no, the lyrics were very important. First of all, when I wanted to do this project, the choice of which songs to try and interpret was very important. Mm. There was a list of 40. And the relevance became kind of a list of things where, like, well, who has done a version of it on bass clarinet?
You know, and probably no one.
Exactly. There was there was a list of things that set the template for the final choice.
Yeah.
And the lyric was in there.
Before we talk about the actual songs, and of course about Zoe Rahman, who's you know, such a massive part of this. It's a duo record after all. Mm. Let's hear you play. You say your favourite track on the record, which is Amazing Grace.
So, yes, please.
So why did you choose that before we play it?
Well, a lot of people don't realise what the song is about or why it was written. It's from a poem which was written by this geezer back in the day. In those days, slavery was abolished, and if you were caught, there was huge fines. So what they did was they threw over the slaves with irons. And he witnessed this. I think he had a moment of realization that this is quite wrong, actually. And he came up with this poem. Now, as a youth, going to the Methodist church in Ladbroke Grove, we would sing this all the time. And I wouldn't realize the implications of this song. You know, it's just a song you sing in church. And then going to football matches, it's the 1-0 song.
Is it the 1-0
song? It's the 1-0 song. So it's always been with me. And when it came to recording it, to simplify it and to make it as direct and to the point as possible, that was the idea, and not to go off into the stratosphere with it.
Let's hear it now. Amazing Grace.
Thank you.
Amazing Grace, played by Courtney Pine and Zoe Rahman, from Courtney's new album called Song, the Ballad Book. So no improvisation on that one, Courtney. We've talked about the material and how hard it was to whittle down to the few that made the cut.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the fantastic Zoe Rahman. She was very complimentary in recent interviews about you. She said that you really gave her a lot of focus after motherhood, that you rang her and it was the right time for her to start really concentrating on a project, and this was perfect.
Yeah.
It's a lot of trust involved in a duo situation. Had you felt that synergy with her before, or were you taking a little bit of a chance?
No, I wasn't taking a chance at all. Zoe toured with us during the Europa project, which was a kind of a classical jazz bass clarinet kind of project with mandolin and violin and viola involved. And on the album Europa, Zoe and I finished the album as a duet, and listening to that, it planted the seeds in my head of, well, maybe I could extend this project, because she has such experience of playing in that way. Her brother Idris is a fantastic clarinetist, her sister is a classical pianist, world-class pianist Sophie Rahman, and they're just a very musical family. So working with Zoe and thinking about a duet, it was no-brainer, because she had the ammunition to deal with that. It's very experienced. I mean, she does solo concerts as well.
Sure. Did you rehearse a lot for this? How much of this was on the day?
Not really. It was a lot
it was
on,
just
the
on the day. Did she suggest any tracks, or was that all you just
said? Oh, no,
saying?
It was all my shout. And she was so pliable in the way that she would approach each song. And she, her hands are busy. She's just had a new child, and she's still working as a solo artist.
Good for
so
her.
I'm so fortunate that she could actually take part.
Yeah.
And then she turns up on the day, and we just did it in 2 days.
Wow, that's your jazz calendar, isn't it? Two days for an album. Well, we wish you good luck on the tour. Now, you are Courtney Pine, CBE.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Courtney Pine, perhaps we're thinking, maybe.
I'm CBE. I think they're going to take it back.
I think they're similar, but we wish you all the very best on the tour. And we're going to play now A Child Is Born, one of your favourites.
Yes, please. Yeah.
And it's from your new album, Song, the Ballad Book. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Claire. And it's good to hear you. And to folks out there, see you on tour.
Thank you.
Courtney Pine with Zoe Rauman, and that was A Child Is Born from their new album Song, The Ballad Book. And our thanks to Courtney Pine for coming in to talk to me. You're tuned to Jazz Line Up on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Canadian drummer Chris Wallace lived in Edinburgh for many years and became a well-known face on the Scottish and UK jazz scene. Well, he's now moved back home to Canada, but his new release demonstrates his affection for his old home with a cast of musicians all from the Scottish jazz scene. This is Changing States. Thank you. Changing States from the Chris Wallace Quintet, released in Canada but recorded in Scotland, with Martin Kershaw on alto sax, Graham Stephen on guitar, Paul Harrison on piano, Mario Caribe on double bass, and holding it all together on drums, Chris Wallace, who also composed all the tunes. Well, now let's hear from the effervescent alto virtuoso Gilad Atzmon, who releases his eighth recording with his Orient House Ensemble. This is his ballad, The Romantic Church. Gilad Atzmon and the well-paced composition The Romantic Church, which featured a piano solo from Frank Harrison. The album is called Whistleblower, and Gilad is out and about playing live across the country over the next few weeks, so keep a lookout for him. From the Orient House to the 11th House, the classic fusion band in the heyday of the best bands of this type, led by guitar virtuoso Larry Coryell. 11th House are Mike Lawrence on trumpet, Mike Mandel on keys, John Lee on bass and Alphonse Mouzon on drums. Released as part of the Live Love series of broadcasts from Radio Bremen from 1975. This is Funky Waltz, and from me, Claire Martin, until next time, bye-bye. We'll be right back.
That was a Funky Waltz by Larry Coryell and the 11th House, ending this week's edition of Jazz Lineup. The programme was produced in Glasgow by David Allison and presented by Claire Martin. And if you want more information on Jazz Lineup, then there's plenty of it on the programme page at the Radio 3 website. And Jazz Lineup is back next Saturday at the same time, 6 o'clock. Well, a very good evening to you from me, Ian Skelly, here to guide you through our programmes tonight here on Radio 3, which continue in just a moment with live music from Manchester, Elgar, Dvorak and Tchaikovsky on the bill with the BBC Philharmonic.
Radio 3 is live in concert for International Women's Day. Tomorrow evening, the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and conductor Jessica Cottis explore the role of women in classical music. They're joined by pianists Noriko Ogawa and Pascal and Amy Roger and the BBC National Chorus of Wales to perform music by five French females. It's part of a whole day of music, discussion and live performance showcasing the life, work and legacy of female composers. Join Katie Derham and the BBC National Orchestra of Wales for a special concert for International Women's Day from 7:30 tomorrow evening here on Radio 3. And you can find out more about women composers via the website.
This is BBC Radio 3, and it's time to go live in concert tonight, which comes from Bridgewater Hall in Manchester, where live on stage, we're going to join Christopher Cook.
A warm welcome to a concert of romantic music with a capital R. Johannes Moser is the soloist in Dvorak's cello concerto, and after the interval, Juanjo Mena conducts the BBC Philharmonic in a performance of Tchaikovsky's last symphony, his Pathétique. And we begin with a work that is romantic in both senses of that word. If we're to believe one of Elgar's earliest biographers, this serenade for strings was written as a third wedding anniversary present for his wife, Alice, a woman who seems to have combined in equal parts the role of muse, companion, emotional rock, and, I fear to say, professional nag. We should, though, I think, be grateful for the nagging. After Alice died in 1920, Elgar all but gave up composing. No wonder, then, that this three-movement work was a favourite with Elgar himself, although as a string player, it would always have earned a place in his affections. Indeed, he pronounced this serenade really stringy in effect. Not that that moved his publishers. Novello's thought it very good. However, this class of music is practically unsaleable. So, the first professional performance was in Antwerp in July 1896, and London had to wait another 3 years before it could begin to appreciate the kind of composer that Elgar was about to become. It's there in the opening movement, marked Allegro Piacevole, meaning pleasing or agreeable, as it is the first theme introduced by the violas. But it's in the Larghetto which follows that we really hear Elgar of the symphonies that are yet to come, as melancholy and joy are woven together in an unmistakably personal way. The finale, marked Allegretto, returns us to the bucolic opening of the work. Here now is Juanjo Mena to conduct the strings of the BBC Philharmonic, led tonight by Daniel Bell, in a performance of Edward Elgar's Serenade for Strings.